Welcome, everybody, and if I could just reiterate that if there's any questions or comments as we go along, please just chime in there. We have a kind of a presentation to make, but really it's just this is what we're doing, and please ask questions. So does everyone know here how Google marketed the Google Glass Explorer program? Should I explain how that happened, which I think is pretty interesting? I should. Okay, so Tyler came into my office. So I should also say Tyler is part of his honors thesis at Cornell. So we have our research team is an undergraduate music major who's also a minor in computer science, should be, and myself and a staff person in academic technology. So we sort of have undergraduate student, staff person, and professor. And Tyler came into my office last December. He reminded me of this. I had let it go. And said, have you heard of Google Glass? No, what's Google Glass? And we watched the video. And if you haven't seen the video, that is worth watching. And then they had a contest. Google had a contest on Twitter, hashtag, if I had glass. And I thought, gosh, this is a could be a game changer for anybody that needs both hands to do something. So I said, if I had glass, I would live video stream. It's really disconcerting to see reporters writing down as you're speaking, but I'll just ignore that. Yeah, I would live video stream concerts from Costa Rica, Austria, and Cornell and give the audience the conductor's perspective. So that was one of my ideas. I said Costa Rica and Austria because I have ensembles there as well, conduct there. I didn't hear from them. I just put it out there in Twitterverse. And then the other one was hashtag if I had glass. I would use it in the conducting lab to give immediate feedback to conducting students. So they either liked one or both of those. And several weeks later, I got in my spam folder, congratulations, you've been chosen to be a Google Glass Explorer. So because it was in my spam folder, I emailed Tyler right away and Barb, who's the Barb Friedman in academic technology. I said, is this spam a scam? You know, am I about to buy some property in Florida? So they did some ground checking on it and said, no, I think you're actually a Google Glass Explorer. And then the message said, we will DM you when we're ready for you or something to that effect. So I didn't hear. I'm checking my spam folder every 15 minutes because now I'm pretty excited. And several weeks after that, they said, come on down to Chelsea Market or get yourself to California, and here's the invoice. That will be $1,500. So from a sheer marketing point of view, they did a contest on Twitter where you win the chance to be a Google Glass Explorer or beta tester, but then they say, that'll be $1,500 and get yourself down to New York City. And I would do it again. That's what I think is brilliant about the marketing. And 8,000 people did. So that's how I got the glass. And what's it like to wear glasses like that? Well, somebody asked me right when we came in, I think you asked me, what do you see? For those of you that don't know, it's better than that, I think, because when I came, yes, your phone. When I came to pick up the glass, so yes, middle of nowhere, upstate New York, you get used to a certain sense of personal space. You come to the city and that sense of personal space needs to be adjusted, at least for me. And when I started counting, because I was sufficiently ticked off enough, I counted 23 people who almost or did walk into me because they were checking their phone. So they were either texting or checking their email or looking at YouTube videos. I don't know what it was, but saw the part in their hair. So this alone, from that point of view, I think is an improvement over a smartphone in the sense that the default setting is off. It's clear glass, so I can see right through it to Jacob. It's above the eye. It's not in front of the eye. I notice when I give people to try on, they do this to try and put the glass in front of their eye. So it's a peripheral view, which at first, when I first put it on, it's also very light, which is extraordinary considering this is a computer. When I first put it on, and when you see people first put it on and they turn it on, you can see them trying to do this. But eventually, just like you're driving, it becomes pretty easy to read what's happening, even though I'm looking directly at you. So it's a small screen, but it's very, very clear. Also, when I say, there are two ways to manipulate glass, at least for now there's two ways. So I can turn it on just by, I get to the home screen, and I can either say the magic words, which are, okay glass. It didn't like how I said that, okay glass. And then I have options to Google, take a picture. Now it's going to be really confused. Just kidding, glass. Google, take a picture, take a video, video chat, get directions, et cetera, et cetera. And I can say those just like you're talking to Siri, although I've never been comfortable talking to Siri because I think it's a little weird. Or you can manipulate it this way. And I just took your picture. So we can talk about what that means, the ramifications for that later. But it's, as I said, it's very light. I've got to the point now that I've just decided that I'm going to wear it often. At first, I didn't even want to put it on because I thought it was just the weirdest thing. I now think it's pretty hip, and I don't know whether that's because I've seen other people with it on. There's a gentleman that visited Cornell. He was a poster child for Google. He had the T-shirt on. He had glass on. He just looked so hip to me, and I thought, okay, these are hip. And but I'm also interested in this, as an aside to our, it's not my research, it's our research, I'm interested in the social ramifications of this new technology, and I also think wearable technology is, it's not only coming, it's obviously here. It will either take the form of this, although it's hard for me to imagine everyone in this room having glass on, but it's not too far a step, or it'll be a smart watch or a smart pen or something. I think wearable computers, the so-called singularity, is shortly upon us. So our particular research that we want to develop or hope to develop with is mostly in music, conducting, and performance. So the things that I had said to Twitter and Google if I had glass are exactly the things that we are trying to do. So I've already posted a video on YouTube of me conducting. I have a professional new music ensemble in Syracuse, and we did a performance with a dancer and a video in a museum. And I decided right before I went on that I would put the glass on and take a video. So there's a picture of, well, it's not me, but I'm wearing the glass backstage, so you see the personal assistant who opens the door. You see me, you see what it's like for me to walk on the stage. You hear the applause. Then you see all of the musicians that I see. So there's about a 17-minute video of a live performance of a new music ensemble with extra media from my point of view. And that's gotten a lot of hits, and people think it's kind of interesting. Our idea was to do that, one of our ideas was to do that, well, which I'm on number two, I'll get to number one. Our idea was to do that in real time. So wouldn't it be interesting for an audience to come to a concert and instead of seeing my back, instead of seeing the back of a conductor and the orchestra, or in our case, the wind ensemble from a distance, because at Bailey Hall at Cornell, our stage is up high, not only are we at a distance, we're at a different level. Wouldn't it be interesting for a piece or two pieces that we do a live video feed from my point of view? So the audience, instead of seeing this, or in addition to seeing this, my back, and the wind ensemble sees what I see. So they'll occasionally see my baton or my hands if I look down at my music, which of course I never do because it's memorized. Ha ha, that's a conductor joke, so probably, yeah. Then they would see a bit of the music, but more importantly, they would see the musicians with whom they are the ones doing all the work and making the sound. So we thought that would be very, very interesting, and curious whether you think that would be interesting before I tell you what's wrong with it. Do you think it's an interesting idea? What could potentially be very wrong with it? With a live video stream.
Nauseous.
Why nauseous? In my case, yeah. Because, we could talk about that. There are some wonderful advantages to having a camera on your head. But of course, there are also disadvantages. So when I'm making a video, I have to curb my enthusiasm, as it were, because if I, you know, like you're doing, like you want to encourage me to keep talking, and I understand, and I go like this, and all of a sudden it's a video that's not pleasant to watch. Well, we can talk about that for a minute. But a live video stream, there's a problem that I didn't think of. But as soon as we did it, we went, oops. Wow, all these tech reporters. There's a lag. It's a good anywhere from a second to a half second lag of latency. So when I do this, it's a half second later, which might not be a problem in a baseball game. We're used to seeing that now when you see the big screen. It's a serious problem when you're making music, because a half a second delay is another bar, is another measure of the music. So we did a presentation at our last concert about a month ago in Bailey. These, exactly like we're telling you, these are our ideas, and what do you think about this? And then we demonstrated, and then we took an audience poll. Do you think this will enhance your experience as a listener, detract from your experience, or you don't know? Of course, the correct answer there was, if there was one, was I don't know. But what I thought would be the most popular was absolutely detract, because we did a demonstration, and I looked around a room, and people could see themselves on the big screen, and only they saw themselves half a second later. So you just went like this, only you would see it like a poorly dubbed Japanese dinosaur film. You know, it'd be I can't do it, but you know what I mean, where the words are coming out and the mouth's moving at a different pace. But they still wanted to see it. So I think the technology is interesting enough that they wanted to see that other perspective. The most exciting to me, or at least the most the thing that we've done with Glass that has made my life and my students' life better, is in the conducting lab. So what I used to do in conducting lab, I'm going to get up and walk around just because I want to. Is that all right? Let's say I'm a student in conducting and Tyler is the teacher, and then you are all of the musicians, because there's enough people in the class that you can make a small ensemble. And the conducting lab is such that it's a doing course. I mean, you don't come to intro to conducting or advanced conducting and talk about conducting. You get up there and do it. You learn the beat patterns, you learn how to hold a baton, you learn how to read a score, you learn how to rehearse, you learn how to cue, all of the things that are important with conducting. And so what I used to do is set up a video camera, not quite as fancy as that one, but I would be at the back of the room, and I could zoom or not zoom, but if I had to do that, I had to go to the camera. And then after 11 of those videos, I would, after class, take them up to my office, upload them or download them from the computer, or download them, excuse me, from the camera to my computer, then upload them to Blackboard, which I don't like anymore. And that would take a good hour and a half, because you can't just upload, keep pressing upload. You have to wait for each 7-minute video to upload and download. Now, I go after conducting class, I take the videos, and the videos are not stagnant, right? So you'll see an example of this. I can go right up to the musician or the conductor, I can adjust something in the shoulder or the hand, and they see what I'm doing and they see the results. They hear the results, because hopefully the sound changes that they're getting back. And then I can go up to my office, I plug in Glass. Again, I can't be too enthusiastic, so when they do something right, I can't go, that's great, that's really great. There's two reasons. One, they'll have a video that's distracting and perhaps nauseating. They're also, whose voice is the loudest? Mine. So there was an example, which we can talk about later, which is kind of funny, because the kid got his video on the Google Plus community, and I'm aware that my voice is loud on the video, and he was conducting in a way, and I said I was whispering things to him, and he was watching his video, and then he got this whispered voice as if it was some sort of overlord. Look at the, anyway, long story. Then I plug it into the wall in my office, and within, well, usually less than 5 minutes, it says you have photos or videos to share, and of course it's a Google announcement that everything's Google, and so I click on that, and the videos come up. And I just press share on each one. I don't have to watch them, although of course I do. And, but I, each I press share, and then it goes to a Google Plus community that I created in Google Plus, and it's 5 minutes as opposed to an hour and a half. So that alone has been really great. So do you want to show? This is a student who's never been on the podium before. He's an intro to conducting class. The assignment, could you stop it just for a second? The assignment that they had was the class before, they had to practice and rehearse a conducting pattern, so a 4-4 pattern or a 3-4 pattern or both, switching back and forth. And to because that's only 1% of what conductors do, that beat pattern that you see conductors do must be second nature. You cannot think about the fact that I'm conducting in 4-4 or 3-4 or 2-4, or even if I'm doing it separately in each hand. It just has to be second nature, so that you can do more expressive things with your other hand, your torso, your voice, your face. And so the assignment was for them to practice as much as possible over the weekend, walking around campus, walking downtown. They had to do a beat pattern and just keep it going no matter what they did. They went into a store and they to Wegmans to buy some food, and they had to keep the beat pattern going, whatever it was. So this assignment was they had to come on the podium, which, by the way, for the first time can be a little bit, you know, wow, all of a sudden you're higher than everyone else, but it's part of being a leader, part of being a conductor. And they had to tell a story without losing the beat pattern. Any sound?
Nope.
The story's not that interesting anyway, so it's okay. But this is me with glass, and aren't they excited? And what's cool about this, there I just said I might touch you in this class, so this is only the second class. And he has a lot of extraneous motion in his shoulder. It's really unnecessary, and if he was doing a 2-hour concert, he would have body problems. He would have a lot of tension. And I was able to go up to him, as you just saw, and fix it just by putting my hands on his shoulder. Not that I, oh, but I was able to show him where his extraneous motion was. He got the video within, I mean, it's one thing for him to experience that, and then it was quite another 15 minutes later for him to watch the video and see it. So he has sort of two ways to learn what he was doing. That alone, I think, is very cool. I mean, you could say, well, you get the same effect by strapping a video camera to your head, but it's not as cool as this. I think that's all I want to say.
Okay, regarding this.
Okay, the other research things we're doing, and then Tyler, I'll take move it over to Tyler. We wanted to embed a score. Embed music in the glass. So wouldn't it be great if I didn't have to have a musical score anymore, or would any of us, if you didn't have music anymore, we can talk about where I think that's going with iPads, etc. Not to say an Apple product in a Google room, but the idea would be if I could have, if a conductor could have music in the glass going by as it was happening in rehearsal or performance, that would completely get rid of the notion of a big music stand and music in front. And not only that, you could look through the glass, because even though there's an image on the glass, I can still see, if I adjust my eyes, I can still see through it and see Mike. So I could still be looking at my music. If I wanted to refer to it, I could still see the flautist or the percussionist. So I think that's a really interesting way to interact with musicians and still be able to read the music. Because as soon as you look down at your music, or if you're giving a presentation, your notes, you disengage from the people with whom you're speaking. If you can keep your head up, even though you might be referring to something that's here, you're constantly engaged. And I think that's wonderful for conducting. The trick is, how do you embed a score into glass? And then Tyler will speak to that a little bit. But what we've evolved from a PDF, an actual picture of the score, in this case a condensed score because it's a smaller screen, we've evolved from that, or devolved, depending on your point of view, because it's a small screen, it's horizontal view instead of vertical view, like all of our scores. And the big question is, can glass listen? So it's one thing for it to scroll by at a metronome marking. which could be extremely limiting at a concert, because sometimes you want to slow down or you want to speed up. If it's just scrolling by at quarter note 120 or quarter note 60, it might be very, it would be awful, actually. So the question is, when will Glass learn how to listen and know when to turn the page? That's a research project that's down the road, because that's tricky stuff. What we have evolved to thinking about, what about changing notation, period? Why think about a PDF that already exists and putting on Glass? Why don't we think about a new way to notate music that works for Glass, so that's smaller, perhaps it's colorful, perhaps it's not a black and white score, perhaps red means forte and aggressive, and pink means mezzo forte and less aggressive, and blue is piano and soft and legato, et cetera, and lines instead of notes, et cetera, et cetera. So we're just starting to think about that. And I've been speaking for 17 minutes, so on to you.
So just a little bit more about the conductor's view. So the issue, the reason why we're having so much difficulty is because latency is so hard to fix overall. And the issue is not so much the network speed, although keep in mind that every time we do a video connection, even if it's from Glass to a projector in the back of the hall, we're still leaving Cornell's campus and going to Google servers and then coming back, because we're still treating it like a standard Google Hangout if you were to video chat with somebody across town or across the country. But latency overall is really hard to fix, because every time you're sending video, you have to compress it and then decompress it. And of course, although Glass is probably as powerful as your smartphone in the room, it still has latency, and it's hard to get near instantaneous video on a device like that. And not only that, but you really need a specialty. You need somebody that specializes in doing video connections and dealing with latency and things like that. So that's just a little bit more about that. Our current fix, or what we're kind of working towards right now, is using still images. So having a script on Glass that continuously takes photos, maybe every second or every 5 seconds. And then what our plan is for our concert on November 22nd is all of these photos will be pushed using something like Dropbox or some sort of file sharing service to somebody in the back of the hall. And then they'll be presented with all of the photos that are taken from Glass. So if they see a photo that's particularly artsy or beautiful or maybe clear or effective, they'll go ahead and click on it, and we'll have it display on the projector that projects over the hall of the concert. So that's just a little bit easier, and it's not dealing with live video, which is so difficult, is fixed using this still image solution.
Although, you know, I'm just going to interrupt for a second, because what I didn't explain, which might be confusing with what you're talking about, is we always have a screen above the ensemble, a large, I didn't say that. About 3 years ago, I got rid of program notes, because I thought it was very odd that we spent all this time writing program notes. This is what this piece, we do a lot of new music at Cornell, this is what the composer thinks about this and life and blah, 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 and I researched, and then we turn out the lights. It just seemed really ridiculous. So I took a cue from the opera world and thought, what if we put the program notes or the salient features we think are interesting about this piece or why we like this piece on a screen? So I should just say that there's always, it's five times the size of that hangs above the wind ensemble song.
So we're not going to do a demonstration of Google Hangout to show the latency, but it's quite latent, and you can trust us on that. A little bit about the technology behind Glass. So what's interesting is that, before we even talk about this, a lot of this information is not necessarily confirmed by Google. And we've had the opportunity to email with a few folks that have been working on the Glass project. And there's some stats about the device that they won't confirm or deny. So we've directly asked them, how much space is on the device? And they won't give you a flat out answer, which means quite a few of these are taken from using debugging tools and basically connecting your computer to Glass and able to view stats this way. But you can't get all of these directly from Google's site. So first of all, it runs Android, just like if you have an Android smartphone, and it runs a version of 4.04, which is released fairly recently, called Ice Cream Sandwich. And the great thing about developing for Glass, and for us in particular, is that if you can program for Android, you can basically program for Glass. The interface is different. Keep in mind that, you know, your smartphone is facing this way and Glass is facing this way. But besides that, in just a few moments of downloading some open source code, so code that's been written and released to the public for editing and stuff like that, we were able to very quickly get production code pushed over to Glass, which is very exciting, and it really reduces the learning curve. So people will ask, how do you go about developing for Glass? And if you have Android development experience, that's certainly one way to do it. So I always tell people that are interested in developing glassware, that's certainly one way to do it. There's another way that we'll talk about in a second, but just a little bit more about the technology. It connects to Wi-Fi, so it's connected to the ILR network right now. It also has Bluetooth connectivity, which it uses to connect to your phone. There is an app that's available called My Glass, and that's only available on the Android marketplace right now. And if you have that app, you can do a lot more in terms of interacting with the device. So for example, I have a Android phone, and since I have My Glass installed and it's paired with Cindy's device, it will push things like text messages and phone calls to Glass from my phone, but not from Cindy's phone since she doesn't have an iPhone. So they haven't, as far as I know, released specifically when My Glass will be out for the iPhone, but there is, as of now, functionality that's limited to people that only have an Android phone. Do you want to tell the phone call story?
Yeah, it's a funny story. When I had Glass on for some reason, and you had not taken the Bluetooth off or something, and every time you get an email or a text, it appears. And so I was getting these text messages, like, I'm thinking of quitting, blah, blah, blah. No, don't do it, blah, blah, no caps, right, 20-something texts, which are, oh, LOL, it was just like bing, 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 bing. And I finally realized that Tyler was, you were texting at that moment?
No, I think we haven't talked about timeline cards yet, but yeah. It also shows history, that's the point. It's not just
right.
Instantaneous.
And then there was another funny story when I walked into conducting class, put on the glass, and I heard this woman right here say, hello? It's Tyler, is that you? No. And then we had this nice conversation. So it's kind of interesting that, I think it's interesting that Google isn't talking. Well, maybe you don't think it's interesting, but I think it's interesting that they all just can't get along, that My Glass isn't. And when, I should also say, because somebody asked this, did it come with instructions? I think, Syl, you asked, does it come with instructions? No. When to get the glass, you have an hour sort of coaching session with your private glass coach, who's of course 20-something and gorgeous, and they're all wearing glass, so you want to look like them and be like them, and you have this whole session where you learn what to do and how to manipulate it, and then they just send you out into the world, and then they have a helpline, which I called several times because you just forget. But I thought it was very interesting that it didn't come with a set of instructions, like this is how you do this and this is how you do that, including how to develop it.
Right. One other thing about the interface, so Cindy talked before about the gestures, so swiping just like you would do on a mobile phone and also tapping. If you want to kind of navigate into something, you swipe down once, or excuse me, you tap on it. In order to go upwards, you would swipe down once, and if you ever want to sleep the device, you do two fingers to swipe down. So we said it runs on Android. The interface, though, is slightly different. They use something called timeline cards. So basically, when you turn on Glass and you tap it, or you say OK Glass to wake it up, you're presented with a timeline card that says OK Glass, and it shows the time. Then what you can do is swipe back and forth, and you can see recent events. So if you received a text message or a phone call or an email or the weather or something's nearby, you can swipe between all of those. And then, of course, you could always do swipes down in order to turn off Glass or go up in the hierarchy. So that's a little bit about interacting with the device. If you start pushing code to the device, you quickly realize that it's just running right on Android, though. So when we're developing our applications, once we push the device, you see the top menu bar with time, just like if you were to turn on a mobile phone running Android. It's just a very lightweight application that runs on top of the Android operating system in order to make Glass really function.
Are there any questions so far or comments?
Oh, that's a great question. So there's only one screen, so you're dealing with both eyes looking at the same display, but certainly sizing is very challenging, and we'll take a second to show you, it's still very, very early alpha stages of an app that we're working on right now. But you can see that when we just run source code, right, that's been written for Android and it's been scaled to a device that might be, 1080p or 720 or something like that, and you're dealing with something that's now, I don't know, an inch away from your eye, everything has to be scaled appropriately and you can't have 1,000 buttons and things like that. So really, if you take a look through the Glass developing site, they give you a lot of suggestions on developing usable things. So obviously you're going to avoid buttons and you're going to work on using gestures. And so it's really a paradigm shift from using contextual buttons like you would use on, you know, a VCR or something, to something more along the lines of swiping and more gestures that we see frequently on smartphones. So we talked a little bit more about using the Glass Development Kit, which is written on top of the Android SDK, so the Android Software Development Kit. The other tool that you can use to develop glassware is called the Mirror API, so they have a glass theme going, if you can't tell. And before they talked about developing using the GDK, the Glass Development Kit, they really emphasized the Mirror API. And basically what that is a tool to push content to timeline. So if you worked at a newspaper and you wanted to push an article to a certain section of your users, you would develop all of the applications to run not on the device. So you would have a server, you would write all of your code in Python, Java, PHP, they give you a bunch of different programming languages. And then it's very easy to just push a web page, a very simple web page that's like 640 by 360 pixels or something along those lines, and push that information to the device. And in that circumstance, none of the processing power is on glass, which is perfect because it extends battery life, it allows you to be in control of when the glass user is looking at content, or at least it allows you to be pushing it at a specific rate. And what we're doing using the GDK is really using the processing power of glass primarily. So a score viewer, a metronome, these are all things that are being controlled directly on the device. But of course, if you're not developing something that needs that kind of processing power and you're just pushing an email update or pushing a weather update or pushing a news article, you're going to want to use something like the Mirror API so you're not wasting the battery power and the processing power of using glass. And finally, November 22nd is our next concert, and we're going to be experimenting with the still images. And we live stream all of our concerts, so hopefully we can figure out a way to send out that link to everybody that's here. But you'll hear our pre-presentation, and you'll see a few of the apps that we're developing, and we'll be talking more about glass at that concert, too.
Sorry, Forte?
What music is going to be?
I'm director of wind ensembles at Cornell, so it's a wind ensemble, which is essentially an orchestra without strings, although we have string bass. Repertoire on that is John Corigliano, New York composer, Gazebo Dances, which Tyler will be conducting.
Lost Vegas
by Michael Dougherty. Pineapple Pole, which is a British piece. Khachaturian Armenian Dances, and we're doing a premiere by Catherine Licuda. Do you want me to spell that? Some of you are actually writing this down. Likhuta. Ukrainian composer now, who was at Cornell, now living in and working in Australia, called Me Disagrees.
All of the concert information, too, is available on our site, which is cuwinds.com. So CU as in Cornell University, winds.com, and that has the concert program. You'll have a link to our live stream. It also has a link to the blog that the two of us write, as well as Barb Friedman from Academic Technologies, so you can read more about working with glass and developing glassware and stuff like that.
I think from that site, there's actually existing footage, and I don't know if you have it now, of you using the glass at one of your ensembles.
Right.
That, so people can see.
Right. We video streamed the last concert where we demonstrated the glass to the audience. This is the lag problem. What do you think? Did the poll. So if you want to see all that, that's there as well.
Are any of the musicians reticent about being filmed?
Here we go to the privacy issues. No. Just the short answer. When I first took glass into the conducting lab, they were sort of very excited about it and took it into several rehearsals and they're also very excited. There's lots of pictures on the blog of people going, are you taking my picture now? And there's one of the whole ensemble kind of going, wow, Cindy's turned into a cyborg. Just like having a video camera in any class or rehearsal, we videotape each other all the time. The conductors videotape all the time, and therefore the students are being videotaped. This is just on my head. But no student, and this is actually something that came up in a faculty meeting. Should the students sign off on this? I think it's a larger Cornell question that I'm not going to come down on either way, but it's a Cornell question. The whole privacy debate we could get into, again, I won't come down on it either way, but my stock answer, do we want to get into it? the private, because you're touching on it. Somebody asked us when we gave this presentation at Balch, well, what if only a few people have glass and not everybody has glass? Aren't those people at advantage for taking pictures and videos? Well, yeah, but what if only a few of us have our phones in the room? It's sort of the same thing. And I remember the NSA scandal, I won't call it scandal, but the NSA, when it was exposed that it was tapping all of our phones, et cetera, was the very day that I went down to Chelsea Market to get the glass. And I talked to some of the 20-something glass coaches there, and their generation, or that generation, at least, most of them were, you know, they didn't see it as a problem, whereas my generation was like, what do you mean they're tapping my phone? They're going to be bored to death. But this concept of someone coming in and looking at your emails, and now the German chancellor, of course, is not pleased about that. But the other thing I would say is that I'm old enough to remember growing up in rural Ontario. I'm Canadian. We had a party line. I don't know if any of you in the room remember that. But when I picked up the phone, very often there was another conversation going on. And I said, oh, sorry, and you put down the phone and you waited until that call was over, or some of us would be, pick up the phone very quickly and see what was, And before that, shortly before that, there was an operator that you had to go through to make a phone call, who you want to bet was listening to your phone call. You'd dial 9666 and she'd wake up and she'd put in this and that. I mean, it's something that's very foreign to us now, but they would be listening to the conversation. So privacy is a relatively new concept, historically speaking. I'm kind of neutral on it. When people ask me to take off glass, although nobody has, if they ask me to take off glass at a museum or something, I went to get a library card at the library and decided not to wear glass. I just didn't want the hassle in case somebody said, what's that? Are you taking my picture? But if somebody asked, I would say, sir, I'll take it off. Just like I'm asked to turn my phone off.
I was also wondering if the musicians were worried about their mistakes getting caught on camera.
Well, again, they're recorded and videotaped all the time. And in fact, we send those recordings to the student. That's a great way for them. If they're, you're in a rehearsal, we're near the concert, in this case, we're a third of the way through, and some of them haven't practiced, or if they have, they need to have sectionals, and there's still a lot of work to do, but they think it's going really well. All you need to do is record it and send that recording to the ensemble and say, have a listen. We've got a lot of work to do next time. So that we do that all the time. Now, we're not making it public.
So we could just show a screenshot of what the metronome looks like right now.
Okay.
It's a little bit...
Underdeveloped. So one of the ideas was to develop a hands-free metronome for the express purpose of conducting, learning as a conductor. You need to have tempos, just like you need to have the beat pattern in your body. You really need to start having tempos in your body. So a brief lesson: if I set a chord, if the time signature was 4-4, which is most music, four beats there, and the quarter note gets the beat, and it said quarter note equals 60, do you know what that would mean? I'll give you a hint. If you look at the second hand on the clock, you would know exactly where quarter note equals 60 is, because it's one beat per second, right? So you could figure out from there what quarter note 120 is. That would be two beats per second, et cetera. So, but there's all sorts of tempos, or tempi, in between that, right down on any basic metronome, 42, all the way up to 280, I think it's the, although that's getting pushed faster and faster. So it's just lots of time signatures in there that some conductors are good at kind of picking them out of the air, and some aren't. Certainly, if you're learning how to conduct, to give a tempo equals 72, you kind of know, because you know quarter note equals 60, and you say, okay, well, that's probably around 72. But to be really accurate, which is frankly, with a lot of new music where there's a click track, or you have to line it up with a video, a lot of the new music I do, and it says quarter note equals 76, I better be... damn well better be at 76, because if I'm at 60 or I'm at 84, there's a problem. So for teaching how to get tempo in some in the body, we thought a hands-free metronome would be really great. So
what are you looking at right now? So on Wednesday, Cindy and I were in her office working on our one of our projects. So we've been spending a lot of time in the past 2 weeks or so working on our score viewer, but we haven't started our metronome work. So the first thing that I did was go into Google and I typed in Android open source metronome. And what do you know? Someone's already written a metronome, an open source metronome application for Android. So why, you know, there's a principle in programming called DRY, don't repeat yourself. And we certainly don't want to repeat work that's been done previously, especially if it's been licensed for research and work along those lines. An application called Eclipse, which you use for Java development. And I already have the Android SDK installed. And then basically I hit play in Eclipse and I started it off. So what you're seeing right now is not the original, the first download, but you basically all that's been changed from the Beekeeper application that's available by searching Android open source Beekeeper is the view. So there's a way to make it so that if you flip your phone, so you know usually you flip your phone and everything reformats going the correct way. But if you don't want that functionality, you can turn that off. And that's what they did when they made Beekeeper. They didn't align it so that it was facing the other way. So I just went into the source code, I removed the line saying, okay, we're not going to force it to be portrait any longer. So, and then everything kind of just shifts over. So what you're looking at here is the top left, this is the, I can just point at this. This is the, here's your so this is 100 beats per minute, the time signature of 4/4. Currently we're on beat one. These two things are supposed to be buttons that are plus and minus to change the tempo, two drop-down menus to change the time signature, a volume slider, and cut off all the way here is your start and stop button. So this is really showing you how not to develop glassware, because this is, I mean, it's when he wrote it, he didn't write it for glass. He wrote it for using buttons and sliders. But obviously when you're working with glass, you don't want to have to sit there and tap and swipe and tap and swipe to go through all these settings. So it really what we spend a lot of the time doing is on a pad of paper saying, okay, if we're going to develop a minimalistic metronome for glass, how are we going to control it? How are we going to do the navigation? What's the easiest way to do it? How do we lay everything out appropriately? So really a lot of our time is spent thinking about user design and usability and not so much about programming, because if you can program for Android and you have a background in Java, glassware is not that hard of a next step. So, I mean, we could demonstrate this on glass, but of course you wouldn't hear it because...
Well, I just want, one of the things I didn't tell you, that we didn't tell you, is that you'll notice there's no earpiece. There's nothing in, there's nothing that goes in the ear, which for me is great because I can't stand that. It's a vibration on the, if you go ahead and feel behind your ear, there's a bone here that's prominent, and it just basically vibrates on that bone. So there is a sound, but it's not going in your ear, it's behind. This is a very popular picture. This picture. It's vibrating on the bone, it's very quiet. And the reason I came around for you to hear it is to demonstrate just how intrapersonal it is. So it's less interpersonal than if you had earphones, but for people don't like anything in my ear. I don't like it that concentrated for the reason that I protect my ears. For it to be behind the ear and vibrating is a much nicer experience for me.
When you're viewing this in the glass, I'm guessing you don't see like a big black box that's opaque in the glass, so you're just seeing like the lettering?
Oh, I see. You do actually see the background, so you would see this black background. Of course, the screen is so small, it's not like your entire field of view is blocked, but
and
yes,
I can still see through it.
You see a black background.
Yeah.
But that's the default for all of the cards. So in order to make the text appear, you need some sort of background. So for all of their the start menu, all of the cards, it's always a black background with white text.
If it was opaque, it'd actually be harder for you to see?
No, it is opaque. So it's like as opaque as this black is right now.
But I can still see through it.
Right, yes, yeah. That's true.
So it's not opaque, it's translucent or whatever. But that's an interesting idea to do, to develop a background that's clear.
It would be very hard to see everything
yeah.
in order to make an effective text color. And this is like the kind of usability thing that you think about when you're looking at your phone. You're not worried about things not showing up most of the time because there's a, you know, an actual device you're holding. When you're looking through it, it's a different challenge. And then we're just going to take questions now. If there's anything else people want to learn about Glass.
How long did it take in total for you to download the program, the Metronome program for Android, and then turn it into the final version you have now? Like total time?
This is not the final version at all.
Where it is right now.
Okay. Yeah. Not long. I mean, I already had installed, I've done Android development in the past, so I have a background there. So I already have the Android SDK installed. I never even installed the Glass development kit because, to be honest, my guess is that it's just a rebranded version of the Android development kit. So all we did was download it from GitHub, go to file import, and then hit play. And then when it was facing the wrong way, I went into the manifest file. I don't know if you have an Android background. I removed the tag that requires it to be portrait, and then it just flipped.
So like 5 minutes, literally.
Yeah.
And how many years experience do you have with Android programming?
With the Android SDK, I have 1 year of experience doing something outside of the music department. With Java in general, I have 3 or 4 years of experience.
One of the things that I'm learning, is my background is all music. One of the things I'm learning about programming is that it's sort of 1% code writing and programming and 99% checking errors on Google. And the thing that Tyler has taught me is that just about everything that you want to do, that we want to do, has been done in some form or another. We just have to adapt it. That was new. That was a revelation for me. Probably not for you, because you're in this world, but as a musician, it's like, wow. It's moving so fast.
Would you take up programming? Do you think you would want to do that? I mean, you have Tyler, right, but...
Well, Tyler's actually offered to teach me, so... I'm learning. I'm just like in there like a dirty shirt, because most of what he says is, what?
Right.
But now I'm sort of get it, which is I'm learning.
The hard
part I'm
just
going to do a MOOC actually.
Oh really?
Basic programming. Why not? It's free.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's hard to start with Glassware because you have basic programming concepts and then Java and then Glass things, but it's certainly doable, I think. Mm-hmm.
So have you figured out what's your replacing the buttons and stuff on the Metronome with?
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be some combination of tapping and swiping. There's really no way to avoid that. The hard thing about voice commands is that if you're using your metronome, you're probably also rehearsing the ensemble. So in order to have the metronome active all the time and trigger with voice commands, that would really eat up a lot of battery life. So we're still thinking about that. We're still thinking about how to make the most usable experience. The good thing is that some of this stuff is not really necessary. If we're just going for a very basic metronome that provides a consistent pulse, you don't need time signature because all the time signature does is make a really big beat where your downbeat is. So really, in order to make it as simple as possible, is we can remove time signature. We can also remove volume because Glass has a native default volume that's set through the settings panel, which all that leaves left is adjusting the BPS. So if we can do that by sliding versus tapping every time you want to increase or decrease, that would be easy. And then starting and stopping, 2 fingers, or maybe there's
Or just say stop.
Right, but then we have a battery life problem with the microphone.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, if truly wants to be hands free, then we do need to think about developing voice commands. Then it's not hands free anymore because you still have this tick. So you need to say start, stop, faster, slower.
What's the battery life like?
Terrible. So the video I took of the concert, if I say okay Glass, take a video, and it'll give me the option extend the video. You tap to extend the video. It's about 17 or 18 minutes.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Now I could have be plugged in, you know, but what's the point of that, right? There's some things that I feel. I mean, first of all, I think this is extraordinary. So bottom line, I think it's an amazing technology. What could be better? The battery life. There's no zoom on the camera. What that to me would have been just right to zoom. Sorry. To zoom in or zoom out could have been, because the picture I took of you is exactly what I'm seeing. if I wanted to get closer to your face, and maybe that's why they didn't want to do it, because that's getting creepy, you know, that I could just go, you know. So there's no Zoom for the camera as well, which means I have to walk up to that. Little things like that. I thought, God, I wonder why they didn't do that.
The hard thing with the battery for constant video is that the display is also on while you're recording. So I had glass over fall break, which was 2 weeks ago, and I just wanted to try out the turn-by-turn directions. So what they do, and it's probably a 45-minute drive to my grandmother's house, so to have the battery life be sustainable, they turn off the display. So until you're about to make a turn and it says, ding, make a right or something, the display is off, which can be troubling when you're driving and you want to know how much longer you're going. You can always check it by tapping, but of course that's not a hands-free solution. So they are working on it. I think my guess is that when they're thinking about video, they're probably not thinking of recording hour-long concerts and things like that, but short little videos of, you know, if you go to their site, you see little toddlers running around and skydiving and the most, you know, lifelike, realistic things we do every day.
The quality, by the way, of the picture and the video is very good. Sound, not so much, which of course is important to us, but the picture quality is quite good. One thing you said yesterday, someone asked about the distraction of the GPS while you're driving, and what I found interesting that you said was that you thought it was safer.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about this as I was driving. Is this a safer solution than using a GPS in your car? And I think that it depends on the kind of GPS. So my family has a Prius, and that GPS is baked into the dash. So if you want to consult the GPS while you're driving, you're taking your eyes off of the glass, not the glass, and you're looking down at the GPS, which is located near your air conditioning and other devices there. If you have a GPS like I do in my car, which is just stuck onto the windshield, I think that's a safer solution than glass. It's on all the time. It's right there. You're not really moving your whole head. So I think if the scale of safety, it's probably safest to have the windshield stuck GPS, then probably glass, and then probably the GPS that's inside the console of the car.
How much time troubleshooting did you spend with Google?
Depends on the problem. What's really unfortunate and we found very difficult was connecting to Cornell's enterprise network. And that took us a unacceptably long time in our wireless connection. And what made it so difficult was the fact that Cornell uses an enterprise network connection, like, you know, big offices, things like that, where you're authenticating with what we have at Cornell, which are net IDs and your password. So it's not as native as just using a WPA or a web key or something to connect. There's a second layer. So in order to get around that, so if you're connecting any sort of Wii or Xbox or something that doesn't have a browser like Glass, you can go to a different site and type in a MAC address. So here we are in the office, we're scrolling through settings, and what do you know? Glass will not tell you what the MAC address is of your specific device. So we call up the Google Glass hotline and we speak to Charlie.
And they're wonderful, by the way. They're wonderful people when they're very friendly and how can we help you? And I'm sorry you're having this problem. But
Charlie says he searches around, and just like we Googled before we called, there's no way to look up the MAC address. So their solution is to have a route, a non-password protected router, open up the router preferences, look at the MAC address, and then write it down, which is not a realistic solution at all. You expect to just open up your settings panel and see a MAC address. So a wireless identification address is basically what a MAC address is. So that's the kind of oversight that you don't expect from a product like Google Glass. Of course, it's still in beta and things like that. I'm sure that they'll eventually easily display the MAC address, but
I don't know.
Clearly an oversight.
It's been a bit proprietary.
As far as your sheet music app, are you developing the same way as the Beekeeper, where you're trying to look for open source code? I mean, where are you guys at with that right now?
Yeah. So the first thing, really what I wanted to do when developing it was just to see what it would look like. So Android and Java doesn't have a native PDF viewer built in. So your options are to, once again, go on the internet and search open source Android PDF viewer. And there's not that much out there for PDF viewing. There are a few solutions, and you kind of have to roll your own and deal with error codes and sift through it yourself, but it was certainly not as plug-and-play as the Metronome app was. In order to just instantly see what it would be like to look at the view, to look at a score through Glass, I just used the Google Doc viewer. So if you have Gmail and you click View PDF in your email, it opens with this Google Doc viewer, which has a top bar that says Google Docs, and it displays that way. So that was just a super quick, obviously not feasible because it's extremely hard to manipulate it because it's inside of a browser, but a super quick way to look at PDFs. So we did that, and I just found something off of IMSLP, which is a library of sheet music that's no longer copywritten, and I saw a score, and it was useful, and it was very interesting, and certainly had prospect. So where we're at now is implementing an open source PDF viewer library, basically. And I started working through it, and of course there's bugs and code that's not complete from the person that was developing it previously, but that's currently where we're at right now with that.
So would that in fact benefit you as a conductor to see the score in the glass that way?
Absolutely.
Why?
Yeah, because then I don't have to look down.
But don't you have the score mostly memorized anyway?
Yeah. So this is why we got talking about, even though a score is mostly memorized or completely memorized or partly memorized, at a concert or your final dress rehearsal and or the concert, it's still nice to have those visual cues of where I need to cue the clarinets, or this is a time signature change, or this is a meter change, or this is a tempo change. And it would just be analogous to you saying you wanted to give a presentation with a PowerPoint, although I don't know, we're using PowerPoint, and you basically have your presentation memorized. It's still nice to have those little notes to just keep you on track. So, the short answer to your question is yes, it's nice to have cues. But because it's been difficult for us to do the PDFs and will Glass listen, and you can't manipulate PDFs, and how do you turn the page? You know, we thought about having developing something that says do that as if you were flipping the page and it would turn the page, which is still an option. This is why we got thinking about developing a new way to notate. So yes, the score is memorized, so why do I need all the notes and rhythms and time changes? I just need those little cues. Well, what would those cues look like? And so now we're kind of thinking about, wow, we could, I've called it a salient score. We could just pick the things that are the most important. On the downbeat, you need to know that the clarinets, the marimba, and the violins are playing. You need to know you don't need 4-4, you just need a 4, and you need, 120 to know. And then as something's going by, you see something in green, and that becomes another, oh, the trumpets have come in. And because you know the score already from a let's call it a traditional notated score, and we'll develop something called a salient score, that might be kind of cool. It might be a new way to notate music using Glass. So I find it kind of exciting that the technology is changing how I am thinking about music and notating music. Which is really, how many people in the room know how to read music? Not very many, and that's sad. What if we came up with a way to notate music that was more universal, and maybe technology is getting us to think about that so that it becomes a little more universal language as opposed to people that got to study it in school.
So do you foresee a time where all of the musicians in the ensemble would be wearing Glass and be able to just, get rid of the sheet music altogether?
Yes. I foresee a time when everybody in a classroom would have Glass, and then you have all sorts of other issues that you've got to deal with. But I think it could be very interesting. The whole idea of a music stand, which is black and thick, that has a piece of white music on it, or worse, a big cardboard folder, to get rid of that, to me, is very exciting. So that there's no music, and there's no metal in the way, there's no wood in the way, it's just you and the musicians. And we're already basically doing that with the iPad. There's a lot of musicians that play from the iPad now. I do iPad rehearsals, or have done iPad rehearsals, where instead of the score on a piece of paper, it's on an iPad, which I can just do this. And the cool thing about that is that the musicians, if I was to hand out a piece of music to you, you would just have your part. You have the first violin part, you'd have the first flute part, you would have the snare drum part, and the snare drum part's the worst because it's got a whole bunch of rests, and it's just got a whole bunch of rests, and then you come in the final thing with this roll. In the meantime, you're counting all these rests. Well, what's interesting about putting the score on the iPad and behind me in a rehearsal is that they see the big picture. So instead of seeing just the snare drum part or the trumpet part or the violin part, they see how they fit into, visually now, as well as aurally, how they fit in. They see what I see. The secret's out. So it changed how I did a rehearsal. And I don't know how many times since I've held up the score to say, look how transparent it is here, or look how thick it is here. You don't have to play forte, because look at all this. Now I just say, look at rehearsal letter B. Why trumpets do you not have to play forte? And they look at the score and say, because everybody else is. and it's just going to be too loud. Because a lot of what's on a score are lies. Ugh. Don't write that. But it's just like, you know, you don't believe what you read all the time in the newspaper, right? You look at a score and you see everybody playing fortissimo. Well, if everybody plays fortissimo, that's a problem. It's just loud and you can't hear things. We're constantly, as conductors, saying, you know, trumpets, take it down to MF, and flutes, take it down to pianissimo, because that's how you balance an ensemble. If they see that already, they can start making those decisions on their own. Pie in the sky would be really cool, like an actual pie.
So maybe if the lag issue gets fixed, maybe you can conduct a virtual orchestra, remote orchestra, and maybe yo-yo.
That's just crazy talk. There's a part of me that gets I mentioned MOOCs. Of course, there's a lot of discussion amongst the professorial folks that they're afraid of MOOCs, and they're afraid of MOOCs because they're out of a job, essentially. I think MOOCs are fascinating, and I'm signed up for one. It's higher ed, in my opinion, is in a very precarious position, and it's a shift on how we have to think about delivering content. Why would you pay $40,000 to go to a school when you can have a free MOOC? And even though people are saying now, well, it's not the same, and it's not the brand, and above, there's already articles out there about people that are putting MOOCs on their resume, and they mean something. And then I have music professors, or in my tight little circle of conductors, that say, well, you could never, but you can't make that experience happen. You can't make that ensemble experience happen on a MOOC. Google it. There's already MOOCs happening for ensemble. Eric Whitaker, who's a very famous choral conductor, has done a virtual choir where he got a bunch of singers from around the world to sing a certain section of his music, and he put it all together. No, it's not the same as being in the same room, but, you know, my niece, on her iPad, she just disappears, right, on that iPad. I think the concept of being in a room and doing something together, maybe it won't be important in 50 years.